Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. You're listening to Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. I'm your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey, and here's a rundown of today's special mini episode. First, I cover the USDA's August 12th crop production report, and then we'll spend the remainder of this mini episode with an interview that I did riding around in the combine during the Idaho wheat harvest the first weekend of the month. All right, let's do this.
You're listening to Ag Talk with the Ag Doc, presented by Dynamite Ag. Now, here's your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey.
Welcome everyone to Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. Now, today's podcast is a little different than the previous episodes. My goal with this podcast is always to provide you with the best educational information that I can. However, in case you hadn't noticed, sometimes it takes quite a while for me to get the episodes up to my standards, both in terms of research and production quality. As such, rather than making you wait several weeks between each episode, I've decided to sprinkle in a few mini-episodes in between the research-heavy ones. Now, I've got several emails out to some prospective guests, and as I said in the last podcast, I do have a lot of ideas for upcoming episodes. We're going to cover topics like earthworms and potassium and cover crops, and I'll probably do a whole series on nitrogen. However, before we get to all of those educational things, I do have a few minis in mind as well. Today's podcast features an update that I did when I was out in Washington and Idaho a couple weeks ago for the wheat harvest. Similarly, the next episode will be a mini as well, and it'll feature several short interviews from 360 Yield Center's 2015 Proving Grounds. Well, that's enough of a preview. Let's get started with What's Up in the World of Ag. Okay guys, instead of a crop progress report, today I'm going to tackle the USDA's August 12th crop production report and the ensuing crash in the commodities markets. First and foremost, I want to give this disclaimer. I always tell my Dynamite growers that I specialize in plant nutrition and ag research and education, and as such, I really do mean it when I say that my absolute best marketing advice is do not take marketing advice from me. Guys, if I knew marketing, I'd be rich, all right? So seriously, what I'm about to share here are just my observations, and they're not intended to sway your marketing one way or the other. But here goes. Guys, I wasn't even the slightest bit shocked or surprised by the recent crop production report. Now, in case you've been living under a rock and missed it, here's what the report said about corn and beans. Corn production is forecast at 13.7 billion bushels, down 4% from last year's record production. Based on conditions as of August 1st, yields are expected to average 168.8 bushels per acre, down 2.2 bushels from 2014. If realized, this will be the second highest yield and third largest production on record for the United States. Area harvested for grain is forecast at 81.1 million acres, unchanged from the June forecast, but down 2% from 2014. Soybean production is forecast at 3.92 billion bushels, down 1% from last year. Based on August 1st conditions, yields are expected to average 46.9 bushels per acre, down 0.9 bushels from last year. Area for harvest in the United States is forecast at a record 83.5 million acres, down 1% from June, but up nearly 1% from 2014. Planted area for the nation is estimated at 84.3 million acres, down 1% from June. Now, in the wake of this report, according to an article from Farm Futures by Bob Bergdorfer, Chicago corn futures crumbled after the report to initially trade about 28 cents per bushel lower, or 7%, and soybeans about 60 cents lower, or 6%. Corn recovered some to trade about 18 cents lower within an hour of the report, while soybeans were down about 56 cents near midday. Now guys, this is the part that nobody wants to hear, and I am aware of that. I've talked to several of you recently, and I've expressed my unpopular opinion that yesterday's report was more accurate than Twitter and other media outlets would have you believe. I've traveled all around the Midwest this summer, more than any other summer I ever have before, and I sincerely hate to tell you all this, but I am honestly afraid that corn is headed for $3, not $5. Yes, I understand that Missouri is a complete loss this year, and I understand that there are parts of Illinois and Indiana that have suffered from tremendously wet weather, and I've said on the show before that there's a yield gradient across the state of Iowa such that the further south you go, the worse the crop looks. However, I also know that there are parts of Illinois, and yes, even Indiana, that look fantastic. North of Interstate 80 in Iowa may be the best looking crop that I have ever seen, and Minnesota and North Dakota and Wisconsin are all setting pretty as well. So what does all of this mean? Honestly, I don't know. I meant what I said just a moment ago about not taking marketing advice from me, because that's not my deal. But I would say that we all need to be careful not to get caught up in the hype in either direction. What I've found is that growers who have it really tough in any given year tend to be the loudest, and the ones who have it really good tend to keep their mouths shut, either because they're superstitious and don't want to jinx the crop, or they're just conservative and they aren't sure until it's in the bin, or maybe it's because they don't want the landlords jacking up their rent. I don't know. What I do know is this. We should all be hoping for the best, but also preparing for the off chance that I'm not as dumb about marketing as I think I am. On that depressing note, let's cut to a little upbeat music before we move on.
Do you have a topic you'd like us to cover in an upcoming episode? Go to dynamiteag.com and send us an email to let us know.
Okie dokie. As I said earlier, today's show is what I would call a mini-episode of this podcast. I traveled out to Washington State and Idaho to visit some of our dynamite growers out there the first part of this month. We flew the drone around a bit, and if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you've probably seen some of the beautiful pictures from that trip. The main segment for the show today features an interview that I did with Eric Hasselstrom and his wife Sheila as we rode around in the combine together during the wheat harvest. So without further ado, here's the interview. So today I'm riding around with Eric Hasselstrom. We are near Winchester, Idaho, and we are taking part right now in the Club Wheat Harvest. Now, Eric, a lot of the guys that listen to the show I know are, you know, back in the Midwest, but we do have some people literally from all over the world. For those who don't know, tell us a little bit about Club Wheat. What is it? What makes it different from some of the other wheats that are out there?
Well, they use it in overseas blends of white wheat for noodles and other products. They blend it about 25% with regular white wheat, and it makes a better quality product for them. About the only place that Club Wheat's grown is in eastern Washington and northern Idaho, north central Idaho here. And you, like last year, it had a $3 bushel premium over regular white wheat. This year it's got a 75 cent premium at this point, but the Club Wheat area in eastern Washington that grows it didn't have very good crops either, so that premium could come back.
What are some of the differences, Eric, between, say, the hard red or the soft white and the, I mean, any different kind of wheat and the Club Wheat as far as, could you give us a description? Because, again, it is a podcast, so guys won't be able to see it, but describe what the Club Wheat looks like.
Well, I guess the Club Wheat, you take a regular wheat head, it looks like somebody smacked it on top of the wheat head with a club, and it got all short and squatty. You got four rows of kernels instead of two, like a regular wheat head. A lot of people look at it and they think, well, God, that isn't going to yield anything. But there are more kernels in a club head than a good size hard red or white wheat head. It's just the makeup of the plant.
So what kind of yields do you see, at least out here? We should maybe nuance that a little bit, I guess, and say what kind of yields do you see with the Club Wheat compared to some of the other varieties out here?
Well, in the past 3 years, we'd probably average another probably 10 bushel, 5 to 10 bushel, easy over our regular white wheat. The straw is a lot more brittle, so for direct seeding, it breaks up a lot better to manage the straw for heavy harrowing and straw management to seed back into. And even if you're only getting a 10 cent premium or no premium, if it's out yielding the white wheat, it's just a good crop to have in to spread out your marketing opportunities.
Talk to us about the growing conditions a little bit this year, Eric. I know if you follow the crop progress report, it seems like, boy, everybody in Idaho, they're living the dream this year. The wheat's better than ever and so on and so forth. But you and I talked a little bit before we went on the recording here, and you said it's maybe not that way everywhere in Idaho, specifically here, huh?
Yeah, we had a real early spring. We didn't have much snow all winter, and we got in the fields in March, which it's usually mid-April and May when we do a lot of our seeding. We got in and got things seeded, and the open winter was kind of hard on the winter wheat crops. And so what happened, we didn't get hardly any early moisture. We got the crops in, then we got a little moisture, and then it turned off in June, which is usually in the 70s. It was in the 90s, and just kind of cooked everything. And we're cutting club wheat right now here that looks like 100 bushel straw. It's probably going to make 50 to 60, or usually have a 60 pound test weight, and it's going to be in the low 50s. There's a lot of guys around here having some 40 pound wheat. We get 28 inches rainfall usually. We can grow on the prairie here, which I'm on the edge of the prairie, but you can get 80 to 100 bushel wheat consistent. There's some 40 bushel, 46 pound test weight, which will be feed wheat. I don't know where they're getting all the numbers for the crop progress, but it's not any of the guys that I'm talking to.
Yeah, then you would not be the first person that's told me that this year, Eric, regardless of no matter where you're from. So talk to us about some of the other crops that you grow, because to me that's one of the most impressive things is the biodiversity that's out here. You know, back home, Iowa, it's corn and soybeans, and somebody who's really crazy may try a little wheat or a little alfalfa depending on where you're at. But tell us, what all different crops are you growing out here?
Well, we'll grow chickpeas. Some people call them gabonza beans, like you get in those salad bars. And there's a lot of them. There's dry green peas. There's lentils. There's yellow peas. There's Austrian winter peas. Club white wheat. Regular soft white. Hard red winter, hard red spring, a little bit of hard white wheat, feed barley, brewing barley, and now a food barley that McKay Seed is growing, especially for the Fiber One bars, oats, alfalfa, flax, linola. We haven't tried any pink beans or any of the row crops out here, corn or anything, but we can spread our risk out pretty well that way, and then we're also putting a lot of cover crops back in for soil health. So I guess one of our biggest limiting factors, and Kip and you and I have talked, is our pH in this area. 4.8 to 5.2, pretty hard to grow some of those crops.
But we've talked about addressing that with some plant-available calcium and some different treatments as far as lime options and making sure we've got the right lime options. You know, when we were here before, Eric, and I don't remember the last time Kip and I were here, what month that would have been.
I think it would have been in June, May or June of last year.
Okay, so it's been, you know, over a year now, but I do remember distinctly that you guys had multiple kinds. It wasn't just alfalfa. I mean, you had Timothy hay, you had alfalfa. Talk to us a little bit about some of those crops.
Yeah, we grow a Tuscany tall fescue, orchard grass, Timothy. There's a big export Timothy market here. I had a new field of Timothy this year, and our hay was 3 weeks early, and the export market got shot down by all the strikes on the coast to get it exported, but it made 5.3 ton in one cutting, and the quality was awesome. Using a few of the products we've been using here, and the exporters were ecstatic, said exactly what we want for the $300 hay, but we can't buy it this year because we lost all the buyers, so I got $140 a ton for it. But that, we'll see how next year goes. Maybe they'll get those markets back. But
so you said you're using some cover crops too. With all the biodiversity you've already got going on, what kind of cover crops are you using and why?
We've been using a 7-plant mix: radish, turnip, Austrian winter peas, oats, vetch, clover. I'm trying to think. We've put lentils in to substitute for the Austrian winter peas when the price of them got up. But basically, we're trying to keep something living growing on the soil at all times to keep the biodiversity in the soil better. And it made a big difference. The first year I had it in, the soil tests come back showing that I needed 40 pounds less nitrogen in that crop than I did field right beside it that I didn't have in it. And I was a little skeptical and only cut back 20 pounds, but I'll do the other thing. It's a little hard on some of these, just like some of the Concom products, that when you first think, like Kip says, or you say, you're like, oh, it can't be quite that way until you see it yourself, and then you become a believer, Kurt.
I know. That's why I promote certain product lines. You know, it's all good. So let's come back to the club wheat, since we're riding around the combine right now. I know that the club wheat is maybe not what you'd hope for right now, but I also know that your lovely wife Sheila is going to come cut for us for a while, and we're going to go see some other stuff. All the crops that you've got in the ground and everything right now, Eric, are there any crops that you are kind of excited about?
Well, this year, not with the crop conditions that we had, the hay I put up between the straight grass hay and the alfalfa, straight alfalfa hay, we put up 1,400 acres of hay, and all of my hay averaged more what I've heard in the coffee shop than everybody else does by using Wex and a few other products on it. So I guess I would say that the hay production is good. We haven't seen what the yields are going to exactly be on the wheat and barley and peas yet, but I guess I'd be excited if I beat the average other people by using those products.
All right, now for the million-dollar question, Eric. What's it going to take to get you guys to try some corn out here?
you pick a variety in a short growing season that you think might grow, and I wouldn't have a problem trying 10 acres or so, but I've seen some guys try it in different spots, and we can't even hardly make the corn in our garden put ears on it. But maybe you should talk to my wife. Maybe she'd appreciate some of the products on that.
Well, that's just, you know, that's the Iowa farm boy in me coming out. I can't help but ask. But
I know.
It is kind of cool to see, again, all the biodiversity that you guys have out here. So, Eric, this is almost a little off topic, but I have to ask because a lot of the listeners don't know this. Every time I come out here, it just blows my mind and baffles me. There's, like, no fence rows, no fences. Explain to us again how it is you know where on earth your farm starts and stops and how you keep out of the neighbor's fields and vice versa.
Well, believe me, if you get in the neighbor's field, you'll only do it once. So that's a motivating factor. But they took a lot of there was fences out here over where we're here in Winchester, had more livestock. The prairie, you're right, it's just 360, 160, 80s, all joining, and everybody cuts the line. And if you look out there, you will see a pole on the corners to kind of shoot for when you're planting or doing anything. But it's pretty much everybody knows where it's at. And like I said, you screw up, you only screw up once. So
yeah, I remember the good old days when you used to have some overspray from your corn on the neighbor's corn or beans or whatever, and it was, you'd just settle up with them, you know, you'd figure out what it made and you'd pay them at the end of the year. And now the problem, my dad always jokes that, you know, the biggest problem we have in America is actually that we graduate too many lawyers every year, and they came up with this term called chemical trespass.
Yes.
Yeah, because that creates jobs not for one lawyer but for two. When you overspray, now two of them get to go to work. So I understand what you're saying.
Well, how would you like to have a nice field of club wheat right next to some Roundup Ready canola, right next to some peas, right next to some flax, and bluegrass right in the middle of it? Yeah, the ag pilots around here are pretty jumpy. We have to border a lot of fields by ground, even if we have to use a plane. I mean, it does give us a few challenges.
Yeah, no, that's it is a different world out here. And like I said, it's a lot of fun to be out here and see what you guys are doing. Hey, let's talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, because with so many different crop rotation options, what does a typical rotation look like out here? Could you walk us through all the crops you might rotate, or is there any sort of set standard?
Well, it does depend on the prices of what the commodities are, but just a typical three-year rotation, if you were sticking with you'd have a winter wheat, then you'd have maybe a spring barley, then a pulse crop or a canola crop like peas or canola, and then back to wheat. If you wanted to stretch it to a four-year rotation, you might throw another flax or something in on it. But It does depend a lot. I mean, one good thing about having all those crops you can grow, you switch it around on what they're, you know, which ones are worth the most. So,
you know, my best marketing advice for guys, Eric, is don't take marketing advice from me.
Yeah.
So, and I mean that most of the time. But I mean, again, with so many options, how do you even begin to know chasing the markets?
Well, a lot of the, like the food barley, that's a new one for this year, and then I grow some oats for seed. A lot of those are contracted before I ever put them in the ground, so that'll take the risk out of there. I do pay the guy for marketing advice in the wheat and barley and even in my cattle operation. And, you know, I'm a firm believer you surround yourself with good people, pay them for what they're good at, and don't try to be good at everything because you just can't focus and get a good job on that. So have good people around you.
I think that's pretty sound advice. So speaking of which, we're coming to the end of the row here, and I know Sheila's going to take over. I might catch her for a second for a quick interview. But what else are we going to go look at today, Eric?
Well, we'll go over and look at some fall canola that's over the hill. We'll look at, some spring club wheat that they just got a pretty good variety. Because of the market opportunities with that premium, they're breeding some spring varieties. We'll take a look at some green peas and some other spring canola, and we'll see how far we get before you have to turn around and head back.
Not a problem. Well, we'll jump out of the combine here and talk to Sheila in just a moment. Yeah, because now in addition to talking to Eric, I get to talk to Eric's wife, Sheila, who was the 2014 Local Farm Bureau's Farm Woman of the Year, right? That is correct. Awesome. So I know that Eric does a lot with the row crop, and you're getting ready to jump in the combine and do the same thing, but you do a lot with the livestock here, right?
Yes, I do.
So what all are you guys raising for livestock, and what are some of the challenges you see raising livestock in Idaho?
Well, we have about 125, 130 cow-calf pair, mixed herd. And we're also running about 140 head of Targhee ewes. And challenges this year, you know, as far as what we're looking at this year is our pasture ground. You know, where are we putting the animals this week? Where are we putting them next week? What's drying up? Where's the water coming from?
Safe to say the weather.
The weather is a challenge this year.
Which is interesting because Eric and I were talking as we rode around. If you read the crop progress report, it makes it sound like things are peachy keen out here in Idaho. I take it that's in a different part of the state.
No, I haven't seen any part of the state that's doing peachy keen this year.
Well, they're saying the wheat looked really good in Idaho, so I don't know. Well,
maybe compared to other states, maybe we're looking a little bit better. You know, but we are in a drought. We are seeing an earlier harvest. We're seeing the pasture grounds drying up a lot earlier. We were in the fields a lot earlier this year. We just haven't had the moisture that we usually do.
And that definitely makes a challenge. Like Eric was talking about, you know, if you've got 80 bushel straw, but you're only looking at 50 bushel wheat, that can be kind of depressing.
That is.
Yeah. And you're about to, unfortunately, go get to experience that so that Eric can take us around to the other farms.
It'll be my first time, so I'll go see what it's cutting like.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, that's going to do it for this week's mini episode of Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. I'm your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey, saying thanks so much for tuning into this podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already done so. You can find us on the Farm Journal's My Farm Radio app, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, etc., etc. You can also get the podcast at our website, which is agtalkwiththeagdoc.com. Make sure to follow Dynamite Ag on Facebook at facebook.com/DynamiteAg and also on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @DynamiteAg. And if you have feedback on this episode or on the podcast in general, or hey, if you just want to talk agronomy, please feel free to go to DynamiteAg.com and shoot us an email. That's a wrap for this show. Thanks so much for tuning in.